Read along with us. You're listening to the Hay House Book Club on HayHouseRadio.com.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the very first Hay House Book Club. I'm very excited about this. This is something that we've wanted to do here at Hay House for a while, and we're finally getting it launched. I'm Diane Ray, and I'm excited to introduce the book that we're going to be talking about today, Married to Bhutan by Linda Leeming, How One Woman Got Lost, Said I Do, and Found Bliss, which is really a magical story, and we're going to get into it with our panel today. So let me introduce everybody first. So joining me across the table here in the studio is Emily Manning. Emily, say hello.
Hello, everyone.
And then also joining us are two Hay House book bloggers, and we have a blogging program here for book reviews at Hay House. So if you're listening and you're interested in participating in that, definitely get in touch with us, letters at hayhouse.com. And also I encourage people to check us out on Facebook and leave your questions and comments. Just search Hay House Radio on your Facebook page, and you'll be able to see what's going on with the Hay House Book Club. So first I'd like to introduce Elizabeth Pendleton, and Elizabeth is joining us from North Carolina today. So thanks for being a part of the book club.
Thank you for having me. I'm so excited about this. What a great chance. Hay House has put out wonderful material that I think everybody who's a fan knows how much a part of our lives this has become. Everyone here has said a Louise affirmation, I'm sure.
Oh, definitely.
We live this stuff. So to have a new community where we can share and kind of have the same experience at the same time is so cool. And what a gift. So thank you so much for having me on.
Yeah, that's great. And I wanted you to be able to let people know where your reviews show up in your website.
Okay, they can just come to ElizabethOracle.com, all one word, ElizabethOracle.com, and they can connect with everything, Facebook, Twitter, my blog, and find out a little bit more about the work I do. So everything's there.
Perfect. And also joining our happy group today is Linda Rucco. And Linda, thanks for joining the book club.
You're welcome. I love this idea.
Yeah, this is going to be fun. So, Linda, where do your reviews show up on the web?
Well, I've been writing a transformational / spiritual story blog for the last 2 years called Spiritual Chocolate. And you can just go to www.spiritualchocolate.com. And I've written reviews for Hay House before, and I try, you know, the books that I've picked, particularly Married to Bhutan, just fit into the theme of what I'm doing anyway.
That's so great. So spiritualchocolate.com.
That's right.
I love that. It's making me hungry. So great. Ladies, this is a perfect book to start off the book club with. First impressions, I really liked it. I mean, I know it's going to sound that I'm just being partial, but I thought this was a beautiful story. What did you think, Emily?
I thought it was really inspirational. It really empowers you to just follow your bliss and go after your happiness, despite, you know, just things that come up in the world and the U.S. and that try to, you know, interfere with following what you really want.
Right. Follow your bliss. And did you get that too, Elizabeth?
I did, and what it reminded me of a lot is I had a really good friend who joined the Peace Corps, and she had joined it right after the bombing in Tanzania, and she was already in Washington, D.C., ready to deploy, and they had said, the State Department said, you know, if you don't want to go, you don't have to, we can send you somewhere else, and she went, and the woman lived without, she was always the camper amongst us. She lived without electricity and water for 2 years.
Wow. So you can see the similarities in this story, right?
Oh, my gosh, yes. And so it was a wonderful connection back to that time of sharing letters and her descriptions of the simplicity, but also the joy that you know, she saw a lot of the same things Linda Leeming saw in terms of happiness. You know?
Right. And Linda, what did you think? What was your first impression? Because you do a lot of reading.
Yes, I do. well, I love the book. And, so I feel two ways about it. You know, one of them is that she's a beautiful writer in terms of the descriptions. And she paints a picture of what Bhutan is like. And she really talks not only about the beauty of it and the beauty of the people, but she was not withholding about the harshness and, you know, the roads washing out and the monsoons and everything being wet. And so I thought that kind of picture was amazing. You know, it felt like I was there.
It was very, very visual.
Very visual, very vivid descriptions. The other thing, that, like one of the things that kind of was a question in my mind, and I'm dying to ask her this, is, you know, she comes from Nashville, Tennessee. I was kind of surprised to see that. And then, you know, she was traveling and wound up going back to Bhutan and living and volunteering. And I really was waiting for, you know, what made her do that? You know, what, you know, we are such a culture that is brought up, all of us, whether we want to be or not, is brought up that, you know, your measure of success in the United States is, you know, how much money you make and how many things you have. And
very true.
Here she is in Bhutan, where that's not a measure of anything.
Right.
And, you know, of course, it was much more resonant for me once she met her soon-to-be husband. And, you know, then it took on a different flavor. Well, of course, we can all understand marrying for love and moving for love. And so that was a question for me. Then, of course, I've had my own experiences in places like India and Cambodia, where at first I was very culturally actually repulsed. And then all of a sudden something happened and all of that went away. All of that went away, and all I could see was the beauty in the people and the beauty in the country. And so I'm kind of interested to hear from her, you know, we all want to go to beautiful places, and then at some point we go home. And there must have been a moment when she said, you know, this is for me.
Well, we'll be able to find that out. Linda Leeming will be joining us in the second segment. So hold that question for her, because I'm sure she'll be able to give you some really good insight. But it is interesting because it's quite a trip that she took. It's not the easiest place to go, that's for sure. And go ahead.
No, I just said right. I mean, she talked about how difficult it was to get there, and there's only one airline that goes in. The roads all wash out at a certain point in the year. So, but then every time she says something like that, the very next sentence will be, the earth was swelling with greenery and was ripe and lush. And you just went from, okay, so the roads were washed out. Look at what is she looking at? That must be gorgeous.
Right. It really does sound like this amazing Shangri-La. I mean,
yes.
I would love to go there. Now, one of the things that she says in the book is that, well, the point she's trying to get across, I think, we all need a little Bhutan in our lives. And Emily, what did you think that she meant by that?
I think she just meant that we all need some happiness. We need to go out on the limb and bring passion into our lives and take the risk and do that. You know, for me, I look at I actually studied in Kenya in college, and it was so crazy, and I completely was so anxious going over there that I was going to this country and never traveled abroad. And, you know, I look back on that time as something that taught me, you know, amazing things about life and love and happiness.
So did you equate that with, like, we need a little adventure?
Or? I think adventure and happiness. We need something. We need to go out on a limb and do something that we really love, despite what people might tell us and, you know, what we should do.
Right.
Sort of like the should opposed to what we really want to do.
And Elizabeth, what do you think about that? What did a little Bhutan in your life or in our lives mean to you?
Oh, I caught a lot of the, and I thought she walked a really fine line, because when she talked about a lot of the cultural ideas, there's a delicate way to do that without getting preachy. And I thought she walked that line beautifully. Things like how much Americans need to talk. We are, and especially her coming from the South. I'm in the South now, so I could appreciate we are just one chatty. It is how she described, you know, the American South being, you know, Southern hospitality, and that means being chatty with your neighbor and so on. And she talked about how the Buddhist culture is like there has to be purpose behind your words and a reason to talk.
I like that. That's true.
Like you ride an elevator with, like she talked about riding around and she would just be Gabby, 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 Gabby the whole ride, and how like for the, and it dawns on her, you know, maybe that's not really appreciated here. And I just loved how honest she was. And yet she'd present these ideas of what, would you like a little more silence in your life, which I consider golden, moving from L.A. to a quiet town near the country in North Carolina. So I can really appreciate that. And yet, and about, like, say, the plastic bags, using them literally dozens of times, and they wash them out. And I had felt good about using it once for the, you know, the kitty.
Right.
And but she manages, they're very provocative concepts, really, because they're very deep. And she manages to present them in a way that is just thought-provoking and yet not contentious. And I think that takes a lot of courage.
Well, I got that, too, because I thought definitely to bring a little quiet or peace, because the concept of time for the Bhutanese people, they really don't have, you know, it's totally different from what we all can relate to. So I really resonated with that, you know, bringing a little more quiet, a little more peace, and a little more purpose into our lives, you know, that's just so busy all of the time. And then, but what Emily brought up was an interesting point, too, about, you know, following your bliss.
And gut.
You know, and
sure,
going for
gut,
that.
Emily, Kenya, that's right next door to Tanzania. I mean, that is, at college age, that is good for you.
Yeah, that's nervy. But that brings up another, an interesting question that I wanted to ask the group here. You know, have you taken a step like that? Has there been a giant leap that you've made? And what about you, Linda? Have you done something like that where you kind of had a leap of faith?
Oh, yes. Yes, I did. Well, it happened in India. I mean, I had a miraculous revelatory experience. And before that, I always said that I believed in God. You know, it was like, that's what I grew up with. I grew up Christian, believe in God. I had an experience at the Taj Mahal a number of years ago in 2003, and I actually heard a voice. And from that moment on till this, almost never have I questioned my faith. I go into doubt every now and then, but I very quickly remember that moment. It's kind of like once you have a moment like that, you kind of tuck it away in your heart and you pull it out when necessary in life, because life throws some curveballs. And I think that's one of the reasons why I resonated with this book so much, because under the surface was this whole theme of acceptance. In fact, even on my blog, at the end of it, I quoted her. There's a quote that just gave me chills when I read it. Acceptance is so much a part of being in love, and love can make a person exceptional. And almost everything that she talked about in there, the contrast between her and her husband, it was kind of like there's this peace. There's this peace that one has when there's an acceptance, you know. And for me, it was kind of like when I got that for myself, when I got a knowing of who I was in relationship to a divine power, that power was in me and I was in it.
Right.
From that moment on, it's as if when things happen in life that I would prefer not to happen.
Right. Which... And you wouldn't have experienced that had you not, you know, made that choice to take that trip, you know, kind of following your bliss.
Exactly right. And I still have, I really didn't like India, you know, for that reason. I mean, everything was culture shock. And then after that happened, it was that I was in love with India. And now I look back on it and I say, well, I still have a little love-hate relationship there. Bhutan, it sounds a little bit different, but, you know, that was my experience of that. But what came for me, it sounds like what Linda got out of her experience, which is a sense of peace, a sense of love, a sense of acceptance, and that whatever, there's a story she tells about a contrast between her and her husband about a baby that died, and they put the baby in the river rather than bury them, and the baby's
right.
clothes got caught on a stick in the river, and she was fretting the way we would in this country. Oh my goodness, the baby died, and, you know, the whole drama and the whole story. And her husband was so Buddhist, you know, Well, sometimes the soul comes back for a few years to live out this particular cycle, and then it dies. And this is what, you know, and then they go back to nature. I mean, I'm not quoting exactly.
Right, but the lessons that you can learn
exactly
from those kind of experiences, and that was a huge one for her in the book,
yes,
too.
And her husband was so peaceful, and she was so fretting. So for me, the book was a picture of contrast as well. So, you know, you could see the contrast of the drama of life compared to that acceptance, that peace of
That's
whatever
great.
Way life goes, it's going to be okay.
It's okay. Right. And Elizabeth, I know you'll want to chime in on taking that leap, because I know you've taken some leaps in life and learned some lessons along the way. So following your bliss, you know, definitely is huge, I think, in this book.
Yeah. I grew up in suburban Florida, and I loved to sing, and I made the leap to move out to Hollywood, California. And, you know, I actually wrote songs that ended up getting played on the radio, and that was like the first time when you hear back from a radio producer, you know, that they're going to put your song on, you just have a moment. I know that sounds kind of shallow next to all these deep spiritual awakenings, but, I mean, it really is that idea of following your dream and working hard for it and just having, you know, some success with that and just the joy in it of the creativity, expressing yourself and, you know, getting feedback and all that. So yeah, definitely.
Right. The gifts that you can get when you overcome that fear.
Well, and the thought to me that the thought that was unacceptable was the thought of playing it safe and people saying, well, you have to stick with this and get an education and do it by the numbers. And the thought of not living my dream was not something I could live with. I just thought, you know, and trying to, you know, satisfy myself with material things and a stable salary and whatever it is you get when you trade that dream in for quote unquote security. I just couldn't do that. And I've had I had amazing experiences in Hollywood. I mean, I got to go
right.
to the Grammys and MTV the year Nirvana played and just stuff like that, that my generation, when I was out there, that was the thing. It was magic.
So yeah, so it was worth it. And there was definitely payoffs, even though it can be a difficult step to take for sure.
Yeah.
So, well, I want to shift just a little bit because, you know, one of the central, parts of the book is the relationship. And I really loved the description of her relationship with her husband, the painter Namgye, and, you know, how different the courtship was between the two of them. You know, I mean, first of all, you've got this language barrier of a crazy language that, you know, very few people speak, but yet they were able to find love, you know, against all those odds. So what did you guys think about the love story? What did you think, Emily? Were you charmed?
I was charmed. I'm not sure. I haven't experienced that in my own life, but you never know.
I found it very charming. And just the courtship where it was so subtle in the beginning. You know, she said there was loads of chemistry, but not a lot of talk. And I think sometimes we talk too much. Like you had mentioned, Elizabeth, we overanalyze things. You know, so what did you guys think of the love story? Because I really like that part. Go ahead,
Linda.
Elizabeth.
Can I?
Yeah, jump in.
Let Linda go.
And then we'll go to Linda because I want to get her view too.
Yeah, I love how she kind of snuck him into the narrative. And, you know, just so she's writing along one chapter and sort of the end of the chapter is like, and then we got married.
Just, right, and then goes back to explain.
I love that. I was like, that it just was sort of there, and then she goes back to talk about it. And it does make you think about a lot of things in the Buddhist culture in terms of reincarnation, like things we talk about in the New Age is, you know, these two have a contract? Like we might say it that way, or were they twin flames, or, you know, whatever language we want to put around it. And yet there was this knowing, and none of those barriers, seeming barriers, really ultimately matter. And I loved her taking him over here in his fascination with, you know, our culture.
Oh, that was cute, with the vacuum cleaner. And
yes, and watching the planes.
And what did you think, Linda, of the love story?
Oh, I loved it. I just, you know, it just felt like she traveled afar. In fact, I'm going to get moved now because it was so touching to me that she traveled so far to find her soulmate, and how egoless it was. You know, there was that incident in the beginning where she hurt herself and the man picks her up on the motorcycle, and you don't find out until way further on in the book. And even they were married for 2 years when he said something on the order of, remember when I picked you up on my motorcycle? And she said, when did you pick me up on your motorcycle? You don't have a motorcycle. And so there was this real sense of he didn't feel like he had to brag to her. Oh, I remember you. You know, like we would do here, I picked you up on my motorcycle. It was so quiet, and so you really, first of all, hear the respect in her words for what he does. I don't know how to say it. I think it's a Thanke painter?
Tonka. I think it's pronounced Tonka. We'll ask Linda.
Okay.
I know.
It takes 4 or 5 months to paint one of them, and how he prepares himself for that. And you could just hear the love in the words.
And respect as
well. Yes, respect and love. And his patience and understanding with her, even though there was one paragraph when she said, well, when we first lived together, it was kind of rough because he had to get used to me and I had to get used to him. And I would have liked to have heard more about, well, what were those things you two had to get used to?
That's interesting.
But then you saw, then there were a couple of points where she would say, oh, and he just had patience with my, you know, I don't know, the wetness.
Right. I mean, he sounds like the paragon of patience, this guy. You know, he's just totally, you know, even all the time. And, but also kind of brings to the point of, you know, the destiny, was it meant to be? And what do you guys feel about soulmates? What do you think, Emily? You're single. You think that there is a soulmate? Are there many?
I think there are many, personally. Okay. I mean, it seems for her there was one.
And she had to go a heck of a long way to
find
him.
Right, but she didn't go there to find him. So
that's true.
You know, that all happened by coincidence.
Very, very organically.
Design.
Yeah,
yes.
the way their relationship developed. That's what I really liked, because I just don't see that happening here in the West. You know, because we're so quick to analyze things and, you know, is he going to call back? Is he going to text me? You know, there was none of that. There was none of that.
No, she actually mentioned there was a part where she didn't think that he liked her.
True.
So I thought that was kind of funny.
There was that part. But so what do you guys think of soulmates, Linda?
I used to believe in soulmates.
Are you married, first of all?
I was married.
Okay.
And actually, the way it happened for me was my husband was my boss, and he came up the escalator. I was hired without him because he was very ill. He had come back from Hong Kong. I was in the fashion business. And he had come back from Hong Kong and been very ill with hepatitis from eating shell food. So I was with the company and going to report to him for 6 weeks before I ever met him. And then all of a sudden he came up the escalator, and I was standing with a friend. I didn't know what he looked like. And I turned and I looked at this man, and I looked back at her, and I said, see that guy over there? I'm going to marry him.
Wow.
And 5 years later, I married him. and we didn't go out for a couple of years. And her response was, well, no, you're not. He's your boss. And it was kind of like that. Now, for a very long time after we're still friends to this day, even though we're not together anymore, but I was walking around with the conversation in the back of my head, oh, well, what am I going to do? I met my soulmate. I married him. I had a great marriage. Things didn't work out. We have a child. But then what was happening was, oh, Linda, what are you doing to yourself? You're walking around looking for second best. What man is going to respond to that? And no one wants to be second best. And then I got involved in A Course in Miracles. I'm a student of A Course in Miracles. And the Course in Miracles says we are all one. There isn't any such thing as one soulmate. And all of a sudden I realized that we have these blocks to other people because we're protecting ourselves. And then once those blocks fall down, the blocks to love, they fall down, and all you're left with is who the person really is.
Right.
So I finally developed a feeling of, Yes, he was my soulmate, but he's not the only soulmate.
There can be others. And we're going to talk about soulmates and love and more from the book, Married to Bataan. We'll have Linda Leeming with us in the next segment, so stay close.
Book lovers unite. This is Hay House Book Club on HayHouseRadio.com.
Welcome back to our very first Hay House Book Club. We were just having a great discussion about the magical book. It's called Married to Bataan, How One Woman Got Lost, Said I Do, and Found Bliss by Linda Leeming. And our book club members today, Emily, say hello again.
Hello.
Linda R. is also joining us. Hi, Linda.
Hi, how are you?
And then I've got Elizabeth joining us from North Carolina.
Hello.
Hello. We're all back here, and we've been talking about love and relationships and all kinds of fun stuff, different themes coming up in the book. Also joining us, and we're really happy to have her for our first book club, is the author herself, Linda Leeming, and she's joining us from Nashville.
Hello.
So hi, Linda.
Hi, so excited to be here.
Yeah, you've got a lot of fans. We all love the book.
Oh, I'm so glad. I love talking about the book and getting people's ideas.
Yeah, it's so fun. So we were just having a great discussion about love and soulmates and destiny in the last segment. So now that you're here, we're going to put you on the spot and ask you some questions.
So, oh, fire away. I love it.
Yeah. So I wanted to open it up. So Elizabeth, you know, we were talking earlier about soulmates and love. And I mean, was there something that you wanted to ask Linda to kind of chime in about that topic?
Well, you know, I had a question for her, but it wasn't so much on that topic, but she might be able to put it all together. And
sure.
One of the things, I'm a full-time psychic. That's thankfully what I do for a living. And there was a story you tell about a woman whose nose twitched one day. So she starts making a feast first thing in the morning.
Her
she
nose
lives at the top of a mountain, and you and your friend carrying more groceries than most of us can imagine of this mountain. Mm-hmm. And this lady just knows that you're coming. She trusts that completely. And I'm wondering how psychically aware, I mean, we would call it psychic, but I think of it as just being attuned, you know, being
tuned in. Oh, I agree completely, Elizabeth. I think that, especially ladies of her generation, too, she's kind of a village lady, and she would just have that, you know, she'd have that kind of, I would think of it as sort of a sensibility or trying to use the word, she's sensitive to it, and you know, I really don't know what to make of that. You, as a psychic, could probably make a judgment. But I just thought it was so quaint and so lovely. And those kinds of things often are accepted as, you know, whereas here in the West, I think we have more of a skepticism.
Right, of those kind of abilities. And a lot of people on Hay House Radio that I've talked to, they say that we all have that.
Oh, yes, I agree completely. And over there, because life is slower and because I think part of it, too, and Elizabeth, I'd love to know what you think about this. I think living seasonally, living close to the earth in the sense of, you know, eating seasonally and being outside a whole lot. And
absolutely.
Sometimes the inside feels the same as the outside.
Yeah.
By a nice fire.
I can imagine if you brought a group of intuitives or psychics over, we'd be off the charts clear because of the lack of all that sort of noise pollution and just how clean the connection is with nature and everything around us. And I loved that particular story and how that she just knew and trusted. I mean, it was just like feeling like the day is going to be warm. So you know, start opening the windows or turning on the fans here. You know, you just kind of feel like, okay. And you just know by being tuned in. And I loved how she just followed that. But I would imagine the clarity would be amazing because of how clean the energy is and how there's such care of the environment.
Yeah. Clean living.
Yeah.
And Linda R., let me bring you in here. And there was a question when we were talking in the last segment that you had said you wanted to ask Linda. I don't think it was necessarily about love, but that seems to be the part of the book that I like the best was the love story.
I'd love to talk about
but,
love.
but you can go ahead and ask your question, Linda R.
Well, actually, I relate the, you know, the married to Bhutan. There's a point in the book where you say, well, when you marry someone in Bhutan, you marry Bhutan. Mm. It's almost that kind of thing. What, the question I had was, when was the moment when you knew that you were going to stay? It was going to be your home.
Yeah,
and it's almost as if I'm asking the,
you know, the
same thing about your husband. When did you know that he was the one?
Oh, when did I know that I was going to stay, and when did I know that Namgye was the one?
Yes.
Oh, okay. So I knew I was just felt so strongly about Bhutan, and I wanted to stay there. They let me come for 6 months, and then I went to the, the government and asked, please, may I stay a little bit longer? And I said, I was teaching. I said, the students really don't need me, but I really need Bhutan. And he kind of took pity on me, and he let me. He extended my visa, so it was always that. And also, just in my mind, I guess it's very deep inside me, I just thought to myself, I'm staying. Because honestly, in 1997, when I went there for the first time, I was really only on a 6-month visa, but I just stayed. And so even I think when I first visited, I knew, just somehow I knew I needed to be connected. I needed to be there. So 1994, the first time.
So you felt connected just right from that visit.
Oh, it's so crazy. I know. But yes, I did. I felt so connected to that place and the people. I had Bhutanese friends here, and even with them, I felt a connection. And it's so hard to explain. I think that, I would almost stand and look at myself and say, "Are you really going for this?" Because it's very intense to really just give up everything and leave and move to an unknown place.
Absolutely. And Emily, that was a question. We were talking about that before the show, that you were going to ask Linda, like, you know,
right,
to make a step like that.
Yeah. One of the observations you made towards the end was that here in the U.S., we're addicted to comfort. And you were really honest throughout the book just about some of the discomfort from, you know, your friends questioning you and just even your first year of marriage. So I was just wondering, what would you say to people who maybe are thinking of doing something that seems a little crazy, like moving to a new place? Or
I knew that there, I mean, just in my deep, you know, from the bottom of my heart, as they say, I felt it. It just consumed everything. I think I said when I came back to the U.S., everything was just so, you know, I carried on with life. I carried on with work and friends and everything. But in the back of my mind or deep in my heart or somewhere, I don't know, in my soul, however you would say it, I was just, it was always there. It was almost like I guess obsession might even be a word, but I did carry on, you know, and I was a solid citizen and everything, but I always thought, I have to get back there. There's that great movie that Lost Horizons with Ronald Coleman, and at the very end, it just really touches me because he leaves Shangri-La. I think it's a 1942 movie, if I'm correct, and based on Lost Horizons by John Hilton, I think his name is. And he leaves, and then he realizes, oh, he's made a big mistake. So he just, you see him, like, walking through snow, and he gets lost, and he gets sick, and he gets, you know, and he's just almost just crawling back to the place, and it takes him a long, long time. And that's just how I saw myself. I just felt so strongly. Okay, so I think it's just you, again, what Elizabeth was saying, just trying to be in touch. You can find things that you're already probably passionate about. Things it definitely doesn't need to be Bhutan, but you have to be really aware. And as Elizabeth was saying, you know, cut out the clutter, or that's not quite the right words, but you know, go into yourself, figure out how you really feel. it's a feeling of almost surrender to you surrender to that feeling, that, and that's what I did with Bhutan.
That knowing, you just, yeah, you knew deep in your heart. And also your, what about your friends and family? I mean, were people saying like, what?
Yeah, you asked me that in the interview, and I thought a lot about that. I mean, they totally thought I was crazy. And probably if you ask them now, they probably think, oh yes, Linda. But no, even to this day, there's society resists people that follow their passion. Don't you feel like people talk?
Yeah, I think so. Sometimes they'll look at you like you're crazy.
You challenge their conformity, you know, and the places that maybe they're, they're afraid to look at where they maybe had an aspiration and didn't live it, and you maybe hit that nerve.
Some jealousy.
That was a good point. Yeah.
Well, now, also the second part of Linda R's question, when did you know about Namgye?
Oh, you know, that's a little bit more problematic, because Bhutan was just sort of, yes, yes, yes. The answer is yes. And our relationship sort of, we were friends. I guess you would call us friends. He was so shy, and so for me, the courtship was sort of me, us kind of talking quietly together in Dzongkha, in English, and me just sort of waiting to see what would happen. I guess it was very Victorian. After sort of the usual high school, college, dating around. This was like nothing else I'd ever experienced. So I was really intrigued. But also I was always questioning myself with that, because it's one thing to go, to be a single woman and go off and, have a great grand adventure. But then, you start fooling with people's lives so I have to honestly say, our love grew, and that's the truth, I admired him so much. I just thought he was the most remarkable human being. He was so so decent and so caring and loving toward other people, and funny and nice, and I mean, super, super shy. But our love definitely grew because we had a lot to overcome. And I think if you go into any relationship, nobody has to marry a Bhutanese, although there's probably a lot of, nice Bhutanese men, women, whatever. But what I'm saying is, that's a good way to go into a marriage in a way, because we had to kind of take it slow.
Right. That was my favorite part of the book. I mean, aside from the describing the beauty and the majesty of the place itself, which is really, the star of the show is Bhutan, but...
Oh, I love it that you said that.
I thought so, but I mean, I just loved the relationship. I thought that was so sweet, and so different, like you said, from the way things are done here. And I think we can kind of take a lesson in, really getting to know someone and taking it slow. And
yes, and I think we're so speeded up here in the U.S. And I mean, I'm sorry to say, I don't mean to say bad about my women friends or just how things happen, but we're pretty demanding in our relationships. I mean, I need a commitment. I need a commitment from him now. Well, do you really? I don't know. Or, I mean, I think if you let things go at their own pace, or if you really kind of think, what do I need from this person? What do I want from this person? And if the needs are a little more basic, I don't want to live my life through this person. That's not a really great idea, but if this person can just help me, live my life, if we can be partners together, it's almost kind of, corny in a way, just, and also the thing that love, the idea that love grows, you find a partner and whom you respect and you love and you care for, and just realize that this is probably, once the physical attraction and the newness and the excitement and the heart beating and the stomach stuff ends, there you are with this person. And so you have to always kind of evolve the relationship. I'll tell you, we're Namgay and I really, really doing interesting things together, being in the U.S. because, you know, this is my home, and this is such a huge adjustment for him. It's amazing. And he's doing so well, but part of it's funny, part of it's sad, part of it's just, it's a grand adventure.
It sounds like a new book.
Yes.
Yeah, there could be a part two.
Wow.
We're hoping for the movie. You know.
Wouldn't that be wonderful?
Yes, we're kind of throwing that out the last time we talked, that we hope that might happen. But I can imagine the culture shock for Namgay has got to be huge.
It's enormous because Bhutan is a country of only about 650 people, and Married to Bhutan was written maybe from about 2002, 2003 to maybe 2007, and even now, there have been great changes in the country, but really the way we lived and the way he lived, I guess, didn't change all that much. And so, I mean, I guess it was enough of a change to marry an American woman living there, but I always kind of worked to, I figured I'm in that country. I love the country so much. I feel like in marriage, it's never, you don't meet someone halfway. You meet them 75% of the way or 25% of the way, or it's always a give and take. And so with that in mind, when he came to the U.S., I felt, okay, he's the one that's going to adapt. And it's been enormous because just, you know, if you think about what we do every day, driving was such a huge thing for him, and going to an ATM and going to the grocery store.
That's got to be amazing.
Well, I wrote on Facebook. Some days he goes and he just deals with it, but I think we were shopping for Easter because we decided he was really fascinated by Easter. He's interested in Christianity, and he, you know, so I was telling him about Easter. So we had a little celebration with some friends, and he was going to do the grocery shopping. And it was, I looked on my phone, it was 12 phone calls. And when I was talking to him, I heard him talking with our local grocery staff. You know, every time it would be a different person saying, you know, I could hear him in the background, and because it was just wild. He was just, you know, no man is really that adept. I mean, is that a sexist thing to say? I don't know.
That poses another question. Should they do the grocery shopping?
Well,
we're not sure.
We can send the ones from our culture who's never been out of the country, and they call with questions.
Right.
No kidding.
That's
yeah.
So funny. I could just see him walking around, you know, Ralph's or something like that.
Yeah, he had a list, and then, but you know what he did? He's so funny. He came back, and he had opened a checking account, and he got, so they gave him $75. So,
get much with that.
I know.
So, Linda R., though, I wanted to give you a chance to ask Linda Leeming another question, because I think you brought something up also in the other segment that you had wanted to ask. Was it about Bhutan itself or about the relationship?
Well, actually, I think she's already answered that. The one thing I did want to say is that I wanted to thank Linda, because there's a passage at the end when she is talking about thinking about taking on being a mother, and there was this whole passage in there. Actually, I've opened to it here. The question that, you know, what does it matter how we get here? Sort of like, I'm sorry, I'm getting a little confused here, but it's kind of like, well, am I going to be a good mother? Am I not? What good is it to ask that question?
Yeah.
And I thought to myself, wow, it would never occur to me to even question that I was asking that question. And then you went on to say, well, you know, I just took the plunge, and I'm, you know, I vowed to be the best half-assed mother I could possibly be. And I thought to myself, oh, I felt such a relief.
Oh,
and
oh,
I felt like, thank you, thank you, thank you,
oh, thank
for
you.
Giving people,
that's a lovely,
in general, and specifically me, the permission not to be perfect,
the permission
to just do
not
what
to be
it
perfect.
Is there to
yes.
do. So
and you
I
also
just want to thank you so much
that I
for
think
that.
Is it's really, I put it there because it really is, to me, the summary of the book, and it's about, it's what I think Buddhists call intent, and it's so important, and I think, you know, intent is the most important. I intend to do this. I intend to be a good, you know, as good a mother as I can, and don't, you know, how, it was such a clarity to me to realize that, you know, I'm so worried. And honestly, I mean, on Hay House Radio, I will admit, I was already a bit jealous. I didn't want to share Namgay. So, I mean, but, you know, I think so many women and perhaps men, of course, men go through that feeling with children and especially a new child coming, a late life adoptee. And so I'm saying several things here, but the idea you, Linda, have just sifted out the most important carry away from that book, which is about intent, you know?
Yes.
It's how you intend to do something. It's how you know, it's your mindset.
That's interesting. The power of intention. Wayne would like that.
Plug
another Hay House title.
Yeah. Oh, he's so brilliant. And yes, I do. I watch him on our local
PBS.
PBS, right. And, you know, maybe, I mean, I'm sure, he's so brilliant. And, I'm sure I got that from him.
But Linda R., I like how you brought up that point. You know, you were just going to be kind of the best half-assed mother that you can be. I love that. Because I had asked you the last time we spoke, Linda, about motherhood, and I thought that was just really interesting, some of your thoughts, because you had said that you had spoken to Namgay about it, and you both talked about having children, and he said, oh, we'll have him in the next life.
Yes.
And I thought
I was
that.
Like, yes.
Yeah, I was happy. You know, but also, you know, I think people, that's another thing we need to think about is life. You know, that's kind of, I mean, that was ideal for me, but it didn't end up happening. And I never, ever dreamed we would take on a child. But I think, you know, one thing in Bhutan that an important thing is being adaptable and just going with the flow, because you don't survive in a new environment unless you do kind of go with the flow.
Right. And that's another great theme, I think, throughout the book. I think the ladies will agree with me. They're our book clubbers here, you know, kind of go with the flow. And sometimes that's all you can do, that take that path, the path of least resistance, or just kind of wait to see what happens. Or even as Wayne says, the art of allowing. Allow
the art
it to
of
happen.
Allowing, how lovely. And all, yes, it takes so much pressure. We put so much pressure on ourselves. And some of it, granted, you know, it's a good thing. We're very achieving as a people. I guess our most or all of our audience is in the United States, and it's such a achieving culture.
Right, like that's the measure of your success is how much you achieve or make or acquire.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, one of the things in the book, you know, it's not what you have, you know, or how much you can get or that kind of thing. Actually, you're stripped of all that in Bhutan.
Absolutely stripped of it. And I don't know if I said it in the book, but I sold everything I had. I really did. And I took such a chance, and I don't recommend that. Don't try that at home. But I do, that spirit of finding something that really, really is your passion. I think every human being alive has that in him or her.
Absolutely. Wow. We've run out of time.
Wow.
We have to wrap it up. I want to thank my book bloggers, Elizabeth and Linda R. You guys were great. And Emily and Linda Leeming for joining us. And I hope everybody gets a chance to read this release. It's magical. Married to Bhutan. Everybody, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Check out the Hay House Radio Facebook page and follow along with the book club. Submit your questions to be a part of the show. Go to facebook.com/Hay House Radio.